And by the time you hear this, happy Halloween, 'tis the season. You know, sometimes people see me and think they've just survived a ghost sighting because of how little pigment I have in my skin. I look like a damn piece of scratch paper in a winter on a freaking plate of rice. I'm not even kidding. I mean, I'm surprised sometimes when I look in the mirror that I have a reflection, to be honest with you. Anyways, Beth Castrodale is with me today. Beth, thank you so much for being on the podcast and spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to it.
Castrodale is, what's the origin of that? Is that like Cuban and NASCAR? Like,
oh, it's funny. It's actually Italian. It's Italian. So like the old, and I think in the old country, they would say Castrodale, but now, you know, it's been anglicized as Castrodale. So.
All right. My last name's Baroni. So we got the Italians here tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
Beautiful.
Paisan.
So let's get into this. You are an author, but you also seems like the creepier side of things. I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself, unless I nailed it with that little sentence there. But who are you, Beth? What do you do?
Yeah, so I am a novelist. I've had lots of day jobs in the past, you know, writing and editing. But, you know, my love and my passion, what I'm, you know, most focused on now is novel writing. And I have published 4 novels. They're kind of like, a lot of times, you know, people would call them literary fiction, but they all have sort of a certain bent to them. Like my previous novel was kind of like a mystery suspense novel. And this one is actually a supernatural, kind of a ghost story. So, and it's the kind of story, you know, when I was a kid, I loved writing ghost stories, and I've always loved spooky stories. And, you know, I think it took me a long time to get around to writing one as an adult. I think because I was worried I wouldn't be good enough. I wouldn't be as good as the stories that I enjoyed, you know, reading and watching and all that. But, you know, that's kind of the short version of my story. But, you know, in terms of the Halloween season, you know, there's nothing better to me than a good spooky story. So,
no, I'm right with you. I'm curious to what your stories were like when you were young, when you were writing, like what kind of things would you write down? Just like, you know, ghosts in drapes, like people in drapes, or like, did you go all out and draw some scary stuff?
It's funny that, well, often it was like haunted houses or castles, and I like to illustrate I would do like little miniature books that I would illustrate, and often it would be the kids who wander into a creepy house or this abandoned castle, and they encounter all these spirits, you know, and they try to overcome them, you know. And I think, like, you know, sometimes there would be like, you know, the kids would have to they'd have to destroy them. So I worry that if the school psychologist saw some of the bloody sketches that I did, yeah, I would have been in trouble.
Your kid's nuts.
Right? Exactly. Your kid needs help like immediately. So I'm glad, you know, my parents were actually really chill about it. They're like, oh, wow. You know, but I feel like if certain people have seen it, there might've been an intervention.
I like that about your parents, that they just kind of like, let you be creative. You know, it's what you like.
Yeah,
what made you happy, right?
Totally. I was so grateful for that. You know, I think they were glad that I liked to read and write and draw and all that. I was very lucky to have that, you know, that those parents for sure.
Now, what fascinated you about the ghost stories? Like, do you remember when it first clicked into your head, like why you became obsessed with it?
You know, it's funny. I think it's hard for me to remember like the first like scary movie or show or book that I read, but I just remember like feeling like it had effect on me like no other kind of like, you know, entertainment. And I just thought, like, I don't know why that is. I wonder if it's just like sort of like the unknown or the idea, kind of the mystery of like, you know, do ghosts really exist, and there's this whole mysterious world out there that we could think about. So I think just as a kid, I was equally spooked out, but also fascinated at the same time. You know, being scared and fascinated is kind of an interesting combination, a fun combination.
It's so stimulating.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So when did you take it to the next step? Like, did you join any, like book writing competitions or Did you show your friends what you were writing? How do you move on?
Yeah, so in the early days, so it took me a lot, you know, after my childhood, you know, writing of ghost stories, I didn't really get, you know, do writing in the supernatural. I did more like, you know, I wrote short stories and kind of like, you know, kind of the literary types of stories. It was kind of a, from high school and then even in college, I would try to get input on my writing. I was in a few writing workshops and I took some creative writing courses and I was just getting a lot of feedback on my writing. So that really helped me a lot. It helped me grow as a writer. And I really, I was really delayed though about submitting my writing. Like I think part of it was just being afraid of rejection. And it took me a while. Like I started sending short stories out and then it was just kind of a run. Like I would say like in the last, you know, I published like 4 novels in like 7 years. So like the last 7 years have been, you know, partly that's been work. Like I've been able to really cut down, you know, I had a full-time job. Now I just freelance. And right. So it's just allowed me to really, you know, finally, you know, get stuff out into the world and really, you know, be really like, you know, focused on this, you know, and I'm very, very lucky for that. So yeah, I've just been submitting stuff and, you know, I've been lucky to get things published and I have been able to win some awards too, which has been really nice. So,
that's good for confidence. Oh my God. Yeah. Congratulations on the awards. I'll keep you going.
You.
I mean, you're going to keep going anyways, but now that's like, that's kind of like a reinforcement, right? Like what I'm writing is people enjoy it. People like this.
Yeah. It's really nice. It really is super nice. Cause I mean, I think anyone that you would interview who's a writer or probably any type of artist, you know, there's a lot of rejection. So that's something that comes along with it. You know, like you have to get, you know, I think something that you learn as you're, you know, developing as a writer is that rejection is part of the game and no one can avoid rejection. So it definitely feels good when you have acceptances or you get some, you know, you get some recognition for what someone thinks, you know, was you did a good job on. So
that's why you have to make sure that you love and you're passionate about what kind of art you're putting out there, because like you said, the rejection is going to come. You cannot sidestep that. It's going to hit you flat in the chest. It will.
Definitely.
And if you love what you do enough, I mean, sure, it hurts a little bit, but it makes you happy what you're writing, what you're doing, what you're putting out there artistically. So you're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know before we were, you know, started up here, you were talking about hockey and everything. And I feel like even in sports, right, you're going to lose games, right? I mean, you apply for jobs, job you really want, you don't get it. I feel like we all know that feeling, right? You know, so
right.
You just have to kind of keep going. And if you have that interest, you'll keep at it, right?
Yeah. And what better interest than, you know, goblins and ghouls and ghosts? I'm right with you on that. I mean, I'm curious, do you have like in your mind, do you think you know where the origins of like Dracula or ghost stories came from? I don't know how much research you've done on this, but I'm just curious if you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Some of them are like, I think with Dracula, there was a legend around like with Vlad the Impaler and all that. Like it started in real history, but then, you know, it kind of took off from, you know, historical stories and, you know, spun off from there. But I don't know, my sense of, at least for, I'll just kind of speak for myself, I feel like it's kind of, again, kind of the origins of like, you know, the unknown and things that, you know, that we can't explain and what, you know, I think a lot of times we're writers and artists of different types will try to speculate about what is that unknown space like and what's lurking there and what are the scary things that are there that we can explore and kind of bring out of the darkness and make a story around it. Or, you know, I even think about the old, you know, the legends about like, you know, when there were, you know, eclipses back in, you know, ancient times, can you imagine what people might've been thinking about what was going on?
No,
you know?
I would think the world is ending.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you kind of think
or
about
snow
like,
falling, like for the first time, you think the clouds are falling probably, right? Or the sky is melting.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Like that kind of stuff. And I feel like as humans, I think we're drawn to make wherever there's a gap in information, I think we're kind of, we feel like driven to fill that in. And I think with scary stories, we think about, you know, kind of imagine some of the most horrifying things that could be in that unknown space. And, you know, there you can have some pretty scary stories.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah, we try to just fill in that void. It's so I'm so curious about it though, because it's like, did someone see something and that's like where the story came from? Like maybe they're mishewing what they saw, and then like, how does the folklore all begin? Like someone, because it's pretty freaking descriptive, you know, like Dracula, it's pretty descriptive.
Right.
You know, like goblins and ghouls, or like Satan even, or along those lines, it's pretty it's descriptive. So like, were you seeing something in the shadows? Did something tease you and then your brain filled in the rest? And like, how does it get started?
Yeah, well, it's funny with ghost stories, I think in particular, you know, this, at least like, you know, I've read a ton of them, you know, fiction and then accounts that people, you know, have said that something has really happened to them. And there seem to be ghost stories that get repeated over and over again. Like, you know, for instance, think of the kind of poltergeist phenomenon where you have kind of a, you know, some kind of invisible spirit that's throwing stuff around or making things disappear, reappear, you know, destroying or smashing things. And then you have like, you know, kind of what we call the classical apparitions, where it could be this smoky kind of dark figure or like an actual kind of full bodied apparition. And you hear these stories repeated over and over and over again. And, you know, I've tended to be a skeptic, but I feel like there's kind of like, you know, a reason why. I mean, it could be that, you know, there's certain ways that humans perceive their environment in the same way that these stories come up again. Or heck, maybe if there are, you know, real, you know, if there is such a thing as ghosts or apparitions or whatever, maybe there's certain patterns in the way that they appear. You know, I have a feeling that there's a reason why we have so many of the same types of reports and stories about ghosts. I mean, there's some kind of pattern, you know, be that human perception or something that's actually going on. Who knows, you know?
Yeah, from a story, let's say, like, the first one ever seen or told was 2,000 years ago, and to still be relevant today seems like something's going on.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it's interesting how, you know, so many, I mean, I'm thinking about, you know, the books, but also movies where you see a lot of the, you know, the same type of, you know, well, you think about all the movies about, like, for instance, like you're possessed by a demon of some sort. Like how many movies?
Those are the ones that get me the most. Those religious ones. I'm not even that religious, but when I see like someone being taken over, possessed, or like some exorcism, that's the one that does it for me.
Yeah. Ugh. Pretty scary, huh? Like,
yeah.
And maybe it's something to do with it. It's almost a feeling like it's something that's, you almost get a sense that there's a normal person going about their business, and how horrifying is it that they become possessed, right? You know?
Yeah. Just become something completely different in the snap of a finger. I don't like that. Is there a genre that gets you, freaks you out the most?
You know, it's funny. I think I really like the psychological horror movies where it's not, I don't like, you know, like the bloody slashery type of things. I like the more like slow brewing kind of scary movies. I don't know. Did you ever see The Others with Nicole Kidman? Came out.
I have a while ago. Yeah, I have.
I won't give it away just in case you decide to see it. But it happens. You know, it's kind of a story of a family where they feel like something is going on. It's around the time of the Second World War. And they feel like they're in this house and there's a bunch of, you know, strange phenomena going on, but there's a twist in it that is just, it turns you upside down. And you just, when you see it, you just feel like gobsmacked by it. And, but it's not like there are scary elements in it, but it's not like things are constantly popping out of the shadows. It's just sort of like one of these spooky movies. And then there's this revelation at the end that just throws you for a loop, you know? That is a really good one. You know, something like Midsummer, like folk horror, I think that's really interesting too.
Ooh, that's a real spooky one, huh?
Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. Someone just recommended it, and I was like, all right, let's put this on. Then I'm like, what the hell is going on? Oh, my God.
Yep. I mean, wasn't that, I mean, I think part of that was like, talk about the unknown, like the the main, you know, the main character, the young woman, she has no idea what she's getting in for. And then all these layers get unwrapped about where she really is and what's happening. Uh-huh. It's just terrifying.
Oh, it's so good, though. They did a wonderful job with that.
Yeah.
That's the one that takes place in Sweden or something.
What was that?
It takes place in Sweden,
yes.
I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, it's scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like every 10 minutes, what else is going to happen? Now what? Now what? That's a great one. Do these inspire you to write books the way you do? Like a good movie? Or where does it stem from, I guess, when you're doing your writing?
Yeah, they come from all kinds of places. I mean, I think of movies. I think of like books too. Like to me, yeah. When I'm writing a scary story, or when I wrote this last novel, like to me, I think like setting is character. Like I think like, you know, a great novel that I really think about when I wrote my novel is The Haunting of Hill House, where the house in that novel is a character, and it might be the most frightening character in the whole novel. And so I think like with my novel, I was trying to really think about, which is called The Inhabitants, by the way. With The Inhabitants, I was trying to think about the setting, the house at the center of the novel as a character, and then trying to weave in details that make it, a troubling presence. And I think like, so The Haunting of Hill House was a big influence. I think of like classic novel, The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, where, setting is also a big element there. I love, Stephen King's works. I think especially his, first novel really, really struck me. There's so many different.
Do you like any of his new books?
I have gotten a little behind with him. I mean, I think I'd love to read more of them, but I've kind of, some of his newer stuff I have not read. Have you read any of his newer things?
Or? Yeah, it seems like when he stopped drinking and doing cocaine, the books kind of, they're not as good as like a Carrie.
Oh, okay.
It's unfortunate, but I mean, you can definitely tell that he was under some kind of influence with those classic books. I mean, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many of them. Like, there's Salem's Lot really creeped me out. I don't know if you like.
Oh, yeah.
The Stand.
Love that book.
That's
a long one.
There's so many of them, but
Cujo.
Yes, yeah, they're just they're wonderful books, and I think he does such a good job with empathy, like making us empathize with the characters at the center of the story too, right? Even though all this horrible stuff is
right,
going on,
right, and the character growth too. Yeah, yeah. What makes a ghost story compelling? Do you think it is like that empathy stuff like that?
Yeah, I think empathy is a huge part. Actually, there is a writer, his name is Gabino Iglesias, and he basically said, I think I'm going to maybe butcher the quote, but he basically said, without empathy, horror fails. And his idea is that, like, if we don't care about the characters and what their lives, where they are in their lives and what's going on, we're not going to care about, we're not going to be as invested when the really scary stuff starts happening, and that, that's actually a really crucial part of I think any novel actually, but I think sometimes, any horror novel that doesn't account for that is going to lose readers, and lose interest on behalf of readers. I think having a great setting is really important. And I also think like some of the psychological aspects where, there are, protagonist kind of starts to doubt their judgment of things too. Like,
right.
I feel like when they feel like, I don't know if I can really trust my judgment or what's going on. Is this real or is it not? That you really get into the character's head in terms of what is going on and how they're processing it. And you're kind of like fearful right alongside them.
That kind of humanizes it in a sense, because that's such a human characteristic.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it really is. And, especially if we're kind of right alongside the protagonist with the mystery, right? Like we kind of feel for them. We're like, gosh, I don't know what's going on either. And, you're kind of side by side with them trying to figure out what's going on and being exposed to whatever they are. And I get maybe that's part of empathy too. And I always like too when there are mysterious figures that aren't necessarily ghosts in the story. Like I always love, like my novel has this and some other books do, but where you have like a spooky house novel, but there's like a housekeeper or something who seems to know more about what's going on than the protagonist does. You know what I mean? And they kind of have a sense, they're kind of in the shadows and kind of like mediating between the protagonist and then the mysteries of the house. And like I always think of a really great book, in my opinion, is Rebecca. It's also was made into a movie, and there's the housekeeper character, Mrs. Danvers, is just so chilling. I mean, she's just so, you know, you feel like she just knows everything about what, you know, everything about the house, everything about Rebecca, and it's not a good thing, you know.
Yeah, she's like a this missing link
Yeah,
that connects
exactly.
everything. She's like a key, like a skeleton key.
Yep, exactly. Exactly like a skeleton key. Like I personally, I mean, that's not in every scary story, but I love that element too, you know.
Yeah, you could take it so many places. I mean, geez, just what you just mentioned in the past like 5 minutes, that's so much detail. Like, how do you come up with characters? Oh my, you have to like know these characters almost as if they are real, like you personally know them. How do
Yeah,
you
I mean,
go
I
about
feel like I
doing that?
get to be that way. It takes some time, you know, like sometimes in the early stages of writing, I'll just kind of like write like a bunch of ideas about, you know, a certain character who I think they might be, what, you know, where they are in their lives, and kind of just sketch out a bunch of stuff. And then, you know, I do try to get to know them. And I mean, in the case of the inhabitants, I kind of started with the house. You know, I knew that I wanted this creepy house, and I wanted it to be I had it designed by this architect who believed that he could influence the mind of people, but in what he thought were beneficial ways. But the house has some really screwy, kind of creepy details, and I decided to have the protagonist be an artist because I felt like she would be someone who would be really attuned to visual details and really be sensitive to that. So I knew that I wanted to have an artist, and from there I kind of went off running. Like I had, you know, she's like kind of at a, I figured she's at kind of a rough stage in her life. She's just had a split with her partner, and she has a young daughter who's she's dealing with her. But then her mother that who she really loves has just died, so she's grieving. And then she moves
Oh,
into
man.
this weird house, so there's all these different you know, kind of she's there's kind of stressors on her. And then when the weird stuff starts happening in this house, and it just kind of, you know, she's kind of in a really vulnerable position. But yeah, to get to her character, I just spent a lot of time like thinking, writing, sketching things out. And then I feel like once you put a character in a situation where you start to get a sense of how they're going to react, if you're really rooted in them, you kind of they kind of just become embodied and activated by the setting, and then the kind of situations that you immerse them in. So,
When
kind of a
you're
complicated
in,
answer, but
no, it's a great answer, and I have some follow-ups with that. It was really wonderful. So when you're deep into this process, do you find it hard? Because that's got to be taking a toll on you mentally. I don't know how well you are from, like, when you're immersed within the writing, and then you can just put a pause to it, stop, and then continue on with your real life. Because you
right.
have to go to through some dark places, it seems like, when you're creating a horror story, like someone's mom just died, and you know, like someone, like people are getting murdered, or there's like horror happening, like that can take a toll. So I'm just curious, is there does it take a toll on you personally from writing and then moving on to your real life?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I feel like sometimes it does, it can be tiring. But then sometimes I feel like when I'm really in a story, I mean, you hear that word, that expression used called flow, where you feel like I'm not even aware of myself when I'm really writing, when I'm really deeply into a story. I'm all about it. It's almost like I'm living in a different world.
Oh,
So
that's
I
awesome.
forget
Kind of
my,
like that.
I don't really know. I forget my awareness of myself sometimes. I mean, sometimes that doesn't, if I'm really blocked someday, I'm like, oh, this just isn't happening. But when my writing is at its best, I kind of
Oh.
lose myself, and I think in a good way. But then it does, it can almost, I mean, sometimes getting at what you were saying, it can feel like kind of physically tiring sometimes. Like if I've had a long writing day and my brain has really been immersed, sometimes it's just, you know, just, I feel physically tired from it, actually. It's not just my brain.
Yeah, totally. So what types of things do you do to relax?
You know, well, I run, so that's good. I like to.
Oh, you
know,
yeah. Running's a big one.
Isn't it? Yeah. Do you run?
Oh, my God.
Are you a runner too? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I run. Yeah. That's like a vacation.
Isn't it, though? Like, it helps, doesn't it? Feel like, I feel like sometimes it just makes you just, to me, it reduces stress so much, you know?
Totally. It's insane. I wish, I almost want to create like this app or something where you can, like, while you're running, you can write, like, because I have such wonderful ideas. I feel like a freaking genius sometimes when I'm running. And then by the time I'm done, after 3 miles, it's all gone. I'm like, wow, that was amazing. What was I thinking of? But at the time, it was like brilliant. And I couldn't write it down.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, it's interesting because I think that's common. Like with my, I get a lot of my ideas when I'm not in front of the computer. I'm running or I'm walking.
Yeah.
Or I think there's something about the, I don't know. What do I know? I'm not a neuroscientist, but I feel like there is something about that period, right? Where our brains, where we're not quote unquote on task, but we get these ideas, right? Like,
yeah. It's almost like your flow state when you're writing. It's just like you just are. And then it's like your mind goes to this happy place. I know some people don't like it, like running. I get it. But it takes time to develop, I feel like. Like you have to get the stamina, all that physical stuff. But once you're able to like pace out and put yourself on auto control or autopilot, that's where like these thoughts start coming.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think too, maybe, I don't know if, how you feel about it, but it's almost like you have to be in like steady mode. Like if you're just starting out running, if you haven't run before and you're just starting out, you might be more focused on, you know, I'm worn out.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're in a certain condition and you're on your routine run, then I feel like you're kind of freed up, right?
Yeah.
To, you don't focus on your body or like, oh, it hurts to go up this hill or whatever, you know?
I wonder if that's got to be with everything, like some yoga people, like people are just they've been doing it for so long, they can just meditate. They can just instantly get there. While for someone that's just starting out, it's like, I'm focused on how non-flexible my hip flexors are right now. And I can't concentrate.
Exactly. Exactly. I think whenever I'm learning something new, right? Like sometimes I'm like, I can't even, you know, it's all about trying to figure out A, B, C, and D. I can't, there's nothing else that my brain will accommodate or my body will accommodate, you know?
Right.
And so I think like with running, I think it almost has to be, if you're being creative or thinking while you're running, you almost have to be at a certain level where you're just not focused on your body as much, you know?
Yeah, I do stand-up comedy sometimes, and a lot of my bits and a lot of the, like, some comedy videos that I come up with, that like, almost 100% come on the run.
Oh, wow.
Mid-run. Yeah. It's, so do you, you're the same way? Like, you get a lot of your ideas when you're running for your books or, like more details about your book?
Yeah, definitely. That definitely comes to me.
How far do you run?
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes when I'm walking too, but I try to go, when I get home, I try to write them down. And maybe you try to do this too with your comedy where, you know, I'm like, oh, I got to try to remember that. And then even just, you know, scribbling down a few things so you could remember it. Because I find like if I don't write it down, then it'll evaporate pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever have the moments when you wake up, like you have an idea while you're sleeping?
Sometimes I do, but you know what? It's so awful. Like I don't remember sometimes I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, that was a really weird dream I had. I know it was weird, but then I can't remember the details. I mean, very rarely I'll remember specifics, but a lot of times they're nothing that I can, so far that I can really process in anything I would use in my writing. Times I'm just processing weird stuff from my life that shows up.
Yeah.
But I haven't been able to. I think some writers have been able to do that, but I think so far I haven't really been able to do that, you know?
Right. It's hard. Over the past year and a half, whenever an idea strikes that I think is good, if I'm in a deep sleep, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, I wake up, grab my phone, write it down, go back to sleep.
Oh, wow. So you have
I don't want them to escape me. Yeah, I have seriously like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of just ideas that come to me in the night. And
wow.
Hopefully we'll get to them eventually. But yeah, I start waking up or like whatever I'm doing, even if I'm awake in the shower, I'll stop my shower and go write it down because it evaporates. I don't know where the idea comes from, but it's so hard to recapture. It's almost impossible to recapture. I don't want to lose it.
Yeah, that's amazing though that you have stuff that in your sleep that you will wait. I mean, that is just astonishing. Like, is it stuff for your comedy or is it just like general?
I mean, it'll be inventions. It'll be a lot of comedy, a lot of skits to do. It'll just snap in my head. It's almost like a life form. Like it just comes into my head and I'm like, all right, got to wake up, got to write this down because I will not remember it. I know I won't.
That's extraordinary. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, at some point, maybe, I don't know, maybe you would go into a sleep study or sleep lab because they might be interested in creativity with sleep, right? Like,
oh yeah, I'm sure. I mean, we live in a crazy world. We don't know like half of what's going on around us, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm curious. I wonder.
But
yeah, I was reading your bio and I understand that you had a head injury, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, you were saying studies, like sleep studies, so that's why it kind of re-clicked in my head. I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah,
if that's okay.
I'm actually in a study at Ohio State University Medical Center. I had a traumatic brain injury and I got medical care there and they actually enrolled me in a study. So every so often I get phone calls and I get asked a bunch of questions about my life and, you know, different things. And they have me do, some memory testing and so on. But but it was just a freak accident. It was like, was it 15 years ago? I'm losing track. But anyhow, it was a freak accident. I've never fainted before in my life. And I fainted in a supermarket and I fractured my skull and I was just out of it. I had days where I didn't remember anything. And then when I got up, I was okay, but I wasn't firing on all cylinders for a while and I had to get some therapy and, eventually I didn't think I would, I wasn't sure if I would be able to, write again. I was having actually trouble reading at first, but, I had, therapy and everything else. And I really credit running because I was a runner. I was a runner when this happened. And I think the fact that I was in decent physical condition helped me recover faster. I believe it. I mean, I don't.
Oh, I believe it 100%. Totally.
But I believe it. And anyhow, I'm very lucky now to be. I feel recovered. I mean, the only thing my sense of smell isn't all back. That's like one thing that is still a issue. But by and large, I feel incredibly lucky that that I wasn't just rendered incapable of taking care of myself or reading or writing or anything like that. So,
right. Hey, sometimes not being able to smell something's a blessing, So.
I know. That's true. That's true. But the sad thing is, I mean, it's better now. I definitely haven't lost all my soul, but sometimes your sense of taste, isn't what it used to be, but it's still, it's like, it's of all the different things that could have gone wrong, I feel,
Right. You're still able to write and your reading came back, which is magnificent. So what kind of studies do they do?
It's funny. It's like, I should find out about how many subjects are in the study, but the last interview I had, which was only about a month ago, they said it's one of the biggest studies or the largest study that's being done on TBI. And they're going to be releasing the results before too long, I think. So I'm going to keep an eye out for it. And interviewing patients about, long-term effects and also kind of, how they, how age, I think physical health, education, all these different things affect, the TBI outcomes and everything. So I'm really interested. I mean, when I spoke to the interviewer, I said I would love to get the results. And so I think, I'm eager to see what they're learning from all of us over these years.
Yeah.
So, and it's a pretty long, I mean, every time I'm on the phone with them, I feel like it's close to an hour of conversation with them every time they interview me. So it's you know, it seems like from what I've seen, it's pretty detailed.
Is it, are the conversations, is it them just point blank asking you questions, or is it more conversational?
It's more questions. Like they'll have a question, you know, like I'm trying to remember, but like, you know, how would you rate how, you know, you function on these different levels? And they'll say, do you strongly agree, disagree? You know, like where you pick multiple choice, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a few open-ended questions, but a lot of it is multiple choice. And then at the end, they have, you know, the questions about like, they'll like say 15 different things in a sequence, and they'll ask you to repeat them. And then they'll wait a while and then ask you a few more questions. Then they'll go back to that and say, how many of those 15 things can you remember? You
know, oh yeah, I've been through some of those
different like simple math things that you have to, you know, and they're, you know, they're measuring your short-term memory, cognition,
right. Yep.
All these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. You know, and I always get a little like, I feel like, oh man, I really, some of them like
bomb that one.
But, you know,
they're going to lock me up and throw away the key.
Right. Exactly. That's what I feel like sometimes, but it's good. I'm glad that they're, you know, I'm just hoping that it'll help other people, you know, with all these results, that they'll be able to, you know, make some discoveries that will help the field and help other people, I hope. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's an important one. That's really important because there's so much CTE, which is, the concussion protocol, you know, with the sports. Yeah. So what they can do, I mean, geez.
Absolutely.
I've had a bunch of people on the podcast where we talked about stuff like that, about the head injuries and what works. Like a lot of, I had some people on talking about psychedelics, how that it's like revolutionary. It's like, so imagine that your brain has like the connectors. Okay. And it's like this ski path, like it's so engraved, all of the connectors. And if you get a concussion, like it kind of scrambles those connections up. So what psychedelics do is it's almost like adding new fresh snow powder over it. So then you can start to re-groove those connectors the way that you need them to be or want them to be. So it's almost like starting over again.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard about that application of psychedelics. That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. I have those guys on all the time. I'm just so curious about it because I've had a lot of head injuries myself. I mean, was this just the one that you had?
This was just the one. I mean, I've had you know, where you knock your head on, you know, you get like a goosebump or something from just knocking your head. Like,
yeah,
but this is like a bad one. But what with yours, have it been like sports injuries or?
Yeah, a lot of sports injuries, a lot of hockey injuries. But there was one where I went to, this is hockey related too, but I was watching a hockey game. It was the Blackhawks against the Detroit Red Wings in a, it was a playoff game. And me and my friends went to Detroit to go watch our Blackhawks. We're wearing Blackhawks uniforms and people on the podcast have heard this. So I'll try to keep it brief. The game had ended and the Blackhawks lost. So I went to go walk down these narrow stairs and someone behind me hit me in the head with a rag. So it was like a rally rag, like a little towel. So I went to go look behind him and he was just kind of, you know, mouthing off at me like the Blackhawks suck. I'm like, all right. So I went to go finish walking down the stairs. And the next thing you know, I'm face first about 10 steps down into a metal chair. And this, what happened is this dude kicked me in my back from behind as hard as he could. And I flew down all these stairs and banged my head on the seat. And I broke my orbital bone on my face.
God.
And I had to, the paramedics came. I had to spend the night in a Detroit hospital, which was just something else. But I mean, nothing was ever done. No one got the guy's name. There was no security, so nothing ever came of it. I had to pay for all the bills. It was expensive as hell. Yeah, that was a nasty one.
That's just terrible. I mean, it's awful what happened to you, but it's awful about like human behavior too. Like, I mean, I know people get upset about sports, but
damn sporting event.
Come on.
Relax.
I mean, it's just like, you're going to, I mean, you could have gotten killed, you know, but, and you could
I
have
think
had
because
serious...
I had some alcohol in me, I was a little bit, you know, lubed up. So yeah. I think if I was sober, I might've broken my neck.
God.
But I agree though. The human behavior is just insane. They're like animals. It's just a sporting event, man. Chill.
It is. I wonder if I've seen it sometimes with sporting events and other events, sometimes when people are drunk, like if he was drunk, maybe his behavior, not to excuse him at all, but I wonder if
he was drunk, I'm sure. Yeah.
Could have been. And his bad behavior could have been exacerbated by drinking too. Who knows? But
of course, yeah. I was a few moments away from being a ghost in that damn arena. You've been writing about me.
I'm glad you're not. I would have liked talking to you with you as a ghost or whatever too. But I'm glad you're not a ghost. I'm just glad you're okay. I mean, did you have any sort of cognitive deficits after that at all that you could determine or?
No, not that I could determine. You know what? From I basically came into this life with a concussion. When I was 6 months old, I fell downstairs. I was in a walker. Call it bad parenting or whatever. I don't know who the hell was supposed to watch me, but I fell down like 5 stairs. Me and stairs do not go along. But on my face, and I had 2 black eyes. I think I broke my nose. That was like 6 months.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'll never be able to know like, like what my brain was really supposed to be like. So I'm sure that shook it up a little bit, but I'm happy. I'm able to speak and communicate. So it's not all bad, but I'm always curious sometimes, like what my life path would be if that didn't happen. Like, would I still be the same person I am now, or would I be dramatically different?
Yeah, well, you sound very with it, and I mean, it sounds like everything's worked out, but I know what you mean. I mean, we all wonder, right, about different paths of our lives and how these different things could come into effect, but gosh, here's hoping that you don't have any more stair falls or anything.
Seriously,
else.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a flat for me. I'm not getting any more stairs. Yeah, I'll just live on a ranch.
Right. Exactly. And to have like, you know, I don't know, just put padding everywhere or something.
Just wear a helmet.
wear a helmet. Right. Exactly. You know, because or bubble wrap, right? You can wear those little bubble wrap.
Yeah, Bubble Boy. They got a movie about that.
Oh man.
Yeah. So back to paranormal. Are you a big believer like in real life that like you can communicate with the dead or anything along those lines?
You know, I've always been like a skeptic, but I feel like there's so many stories about like people having experiences. I feel like there's, I don't know. I feel like for so many people to report, experiences like this. And actually, there is a, if you look it up, there's a, there at the University of Virginia, they have a division of perceptual studies where they're looking into the idea, the theory that our consciousness can somehow survive our bodily death. And they've looked at all different kinds of like near-death experiences and
kids who
report, you know, having experiences of a previous life, these kind of different things, after death communications. It's very interesting. And I mean, I think what I really think is cool is that they're approaching it from a scientific point of view about like, you know, yes, we need to have skepticism, but have an open mind, like to just say, there's no consciousness that survives death. And that's just the way it is. Instead, they have a more open-minded approach of like, well, why don't we explore what the possibilities are? So I feel like, you know, I believe in the scientific method. I'm skeptical, but I also feel like I want to be open-minded about different possibilities of, you know, really seriously looking into this stuff. Like, I think it has some merit, you know? So.
Sure. Yeah. That's a wonderful way to analyze that. I mean, who really has the correct answer right now anyways, you know? So it's like, it almost seems in our best interest to have an open mind. There's no definitive answer. No one knows yet. And
I'm
happy about the science too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. And I feel like that's where, I think that, I'm hoping that we're learning more as time goes on about what's possible. And, like so many frontiers in science, I feel like there's always new things that are, coming out and being discovered. And so I feel like, I want to keep an open mind for sure,
Have you ever had a personal experience
Yeah, I've had a
with?
couple weird ones. Like, this was like years ago, but I used to live on Cape Cod, and I lived in this house by the ocean. It was like an attached apartment to my landlord's apartment, and it was kind of weird in that, like, one day I left for work, and this is like my landlord would always tell me, like, I didn't have a roommate, no one else had my key, but my landlord, and he always told me, like, I'll always let you know when I come into the house, whatever. But I came home from work and my thermostats were turned all the way up, and my casement windows and the upstairs were all wide open, and they weren't the kind that easily got flung open by the wind. Like, they had little like sealed locked things, so you couldn't just the wind just couldn't open them. And I remember my landlord actually saying, "Do you mind closing the windows before you go to work?" And I didn't know, I was so tongue-tied, I didn't know how to say, like, I didn't do it, like I just said okay. And then
It
like a couple
was
weeks,
Margaret the ghost.
right, exactly, I thought, I'm not going to say that because he'll just think I'm loony. But then a couple weeks later, like, it happened again, and I was kind of freaked out, and I mentioned it to a couple of close friends at work, and they said, one woman said, maybe I can burn sage or something, and I said, oh, that's okay. And then that was it for that. But it was just a little weird, like, I have no idea what was going on. And then that was probably the biggest, the creepiest thing that happened.
So what
But
do you make of that before we move on?
it's funny, I almost feel like I got pranked, like, but I mean, I don't know, like, I mean, maybe, like, it makes me think of like poltergeists when they're kind of like having fun with people, and it's like your shoes are untied and then they kind of whack you like that, like that kind of thing. That's what I felt like. Like, I felt like a joke. It felt like a practical joke more than anything. So, but who knows? I'll just kind of speculate forever on what might have been going on. Or, maybe somebody was able to get into the house somehow, even though they, the door, I mean, there wasn't any signs of, like, the doors were locked. I don't know. Who knows what was going on? But that kind of creeped
Nothing
me
was
out.
missing.
But
Nothing was missing.
oh no, nothing at all. Everything else was in place. That was it. Yeah, just thermostats up and then windows open. So it was
Yeah, that
weird.
almost does sound like a prank, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's oh, ooh. Getting the chilies just thinking about it. And
It was
that was that's
creepy.
like on the ocean, right? By the ocean.
Yeah, it was nice. I mean, it was a beautiful place. Like, you could hear the ocean at night, and it was beautiful, but it was a little bit like, kind of spooky too, like,
There's a lot of energy that comes. That's what I'm getting at, is like with the ocean, there's so much energy. It's such a big body of water, and so much energy comes with the ocean. And it's like when you hear about spirits, it's almost like it's something's energy. So did something else ever happen to you when you weren't by the ocean?
No, I mean, it's funny, like, one kind of, it isn't really a ghost thing, but like, when I was researching my book, I thought I'm going to write some articles that are related to my book somehow. So I thought, like, why don't I visit a medium just to see what this is like? Because I thought, just out of curiosity. So I went to one medium, and I describe it to my friends as, like, it's almost like I went to a house party where a bunch of guests show up and I didn't know any of them. Like, the medium kind of, like, she'd say, do you
That's a
like
good way to put
it
it.
was totally like that, though. It was like, if you went and the nice people come in, right, and you nod and say hello, and but you don't recognize any of them. And the medium kept describing them, and I think she was getting impatient with me because I said, like, no. And so she said, well, sometimes maybe people who, if you're not really given to believe in this stuff, maybe you're more resistant. And I kind of, like, quietly said in my brain, like, I don't think so. So I kind of wrote that off. And then for the second, I thought, for the second medium, I'm going to try to do a little more research. And I went, I looked into, there was a resource at the Division of Perceptual Studies at UVA, and they had some research that they'd done vetting mediums where they did, like, these you know, blinded studies about people's abilities. And I found a medium from that list, and I had to go on a waiting list to wait for her for like 6 months. And when we got, we got on the phone, I mean, she just said a bunch of like, I mean, it was really chillingly uncanny things like, you know, both of my parents have died, and she basically went down the list of like what happened to them. And this was something that wasn't on the, you know, internet or anything. She said stuff about, you know, things about our relationships that were spot on. She said that, you know, she said my mom, you know, did artwork, and she described a drawing that my mom did to a tea that's hanging in my house. She described like, you know,
this person's never been to your house, or you have no relationship with this person
at all. You know, she said like you have your mother's wedding ring on your hand, which I do. All this stuff that was so specific that it just made me, you know, it just kind of gave me the chill. So, you know, who knows? That was kind of one of the things that made me wonder about the whole consciousness surviving us in death. Like maybe there's some truth to that, but, you know, I don't know what to say about it, Jay. It just kind of really dropped my jaw a bit as we.
I'll tell you something. I think we found a suspect for who opened your two windows. Oh, man.
Exactly. Man, you nailed it. It was you just called out was in plain sight.
Got her.
You just nailed it.
That's creepy. Do you remember how you felt after that phone call? Because I had some of those people on my podcast before, and they gave me a reading. And I'll tell you how I felt after the reading, but I'm just curious if you felt any sort of way.
You know, it's interesting. With the first reading, I was a little impatient. The second reading, I was actually cried during it because it was just so moving. Afterward, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I kept cycling through all the different things. And I wrote everything down immediately because I didn't want to lose track of any of it. But I was just kind of floored. Nice. What were your reactions?
Yeah, this guy, he was an energy healer. And at the end of the call, he on my podcast, he did a reading for me. And it was a while ago. But what I remember is, at the very end, he's like, you have something going on in your teeth, and I think it's infected, and I think something's going on with your heart as well. Mm. I was like, oh, Jesus, okay. So we hung up the call, and then the next day on my way to work, I took a train to Chicago, and I started having the biggest panic attack of my entire life. Like, my tooth was throbbing. I felt like I was going to die.
Oh.
So I get to the final stop. I walk. I'm not trying to be too dramatic. I actually documented it on my phone. I recorded myself because of how like lethargic I was feeling, how anxious I was. It was just out of character for me. So I get to work, and it hasn't passed me yet. So I'm like, I need to go home. I can't do this today. I can't even concentrate. I feel like shit. So I went to my boss. I'm like, listen, I'm just not feeling good at all. My tooth is hurting me. I'm having, like, she was so cool about it. She's like, okay, yeah, just go home, take the day off, no problem. So I made a dentist appointment that day because my tooth was hurting me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to the dentist. They're like, yeah, you have a giant infection in your tooth. We're going to take it out right now.
No.
Yeah. So they extracted that tooth, and then I was looking, I went home and did some Google research. I was like, can, like, a infected tooth affects your heart, and apparently it does. Like, teeth stuff affects your cardiovascular all the time. So I mean, that was real strange how he like pinpointed that. And the day after, I made a dentist appointment to get it extracted, and after that, I've never spoken to another one before because it freaks me out.
Yeah, I could see that. That is freaky. I mean, I'm sorry that you had that infection, but I'm so glad they got it, you know. But I feel
totally.
Like,
God, it's so strange.
It's so strange. I mean, what a strange, you know, phenomenon. That's just like, that's mind blowing. I mean, it's just that's just crazy. And you're right. I mean, I've read some of the stuff too about the heart, like any kind of infections or whatever. I think you know, that's one of the reasons why they want you to, you know, treat that, because I think it can affect your heart if you don't. So it's good that you did, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it's so crazy how some of these people pinpoint it to, like,
Yeah.
it, to ex exactly. It's like we don't have the tools to see everything around us, I feel like. I mean, we have our senses, we can see, we can smell, we can hear, we can touch, you know, but it's like there's some other stuff around us that we just don't have the tools to see or be able to communicate with somehow. That's just how I believe,
Yeah, no, I
you
think
know.
it's true. I think it's true. And I think what I was mentioning earlier, that I feel like there's just, I think that there's a place where science can, I think that science and this stuff can meet somewhere. I think that there's not, we just don't know enough, about these different phenomena, right? And that hopefully we will learn more about what's going on, right? And be able to kind of understand it better too. So, but wow, that is just a freaky story.
So I'm open-minded, needless to say, as well. I am kind of a skeptic as well, but after a few instances like that, I'm just more open-minded. Just like there's no ego behind, like, I don't know. I have no idea. I'm more than welcome to hear anybody out, and like if you can show me some things, that's cool. If you can, if you had like your own experiences, I'm more than willing to hear you out. But the tricky thing is that there are some liars too, so we have to,
Right,
who just
exactly.
want attention, you
We
know?
have to be very, I think, be critical thinkers, right? And I think
Sure.
skepticism is a good approach, but being listen to, reason and things that have been tested and studied. I think that open-mindedness alongside critical thinking, right?
Yeah, it's a good way. That's a good way. Have you seen the American Horror Stories?
It's funny. I saw the very first one, Murder House, and
Yeah,
that
what'd
one
you
I thought
think?
was just utterly terrifying. And then it
Yeah.
just scared the life out of me. But then I felt like they just stopped getting as interesting, and I stopped watching them, But what about you? Do you have there been do you like have you enjoyed them yourself?
I did. I liked them. I liked them, but I think Murder House was my favorite. It was so creepy. I think they did a wonderful job. Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
I thought it was great. I
It was
actually
real
like
creepy.
the Coven one too, of the witches, I think, and that was, I think, in New
Right.
Orleans.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, I think that there's a real, especially, I think, especially Murder House. It was, they did just such, I mean, that the actual, the visual effects and also the story, the way that those two things work together were just so creepy.
That was m more psychological, wasn't it? Like
I
there were a
think
lot of weird,
so,
I haven't
yeah.
seen it in a while, but yeah, I feel like you would have liked that one.
I think you hit the nail. Yeah, it was definitely more on a
Yeah.
psychological level. Like, it's sort of the stuff that, it was kind of the stuff that you worried about that was in the shadows and not necessarily the stuff that was
Yeah.
leaking out in the open. You always had this feeling of anxiety about what's next and what's in that dark corner, right?
Yeah, what's in the attic? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Like that one. I thought that was a really I mean, I think after I watched that, I think, it's one of those ones where you really feel haunted by it. Like, you keep thinking about it, and it was so creepy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was probably their mission that they mission accomplished.
Definitely. I thought that was a really, really, really good one. And have you watched any of the Mike Flanagan shows on Netflix, the series, like The Haunting of Hill House, and then The Haunting of Bly Manor, and then what
I
is
know
it?
what they are. I have not. Do you highly recommend those?
I think they're really, really good. I think the one that you might want, so the demon if demonic possession stuff scares the lights out of you might want to watch Midnight Mass. And it's Netflix, and it's one of the Mike Flanagan ones. I think it's really good. I think it's one of my favorites of his that he's done. It's Midnight Mass, and it's just it'll creep you out, I'll put it that way.
You'll be getting an email from me at midnight.
Yeah, you'll be like, so you're like, Beth, I'm gonna haunt you from if recommending
Yeah,
that.
I'm sending you the invoices for my
Right,
therapy sessions.
exactly. But maybe you'll wake up with some comedy ideas though from it
Yeah, I'm sure I will.
too.
Oh, that's good. Well, Beth, we did it. It's been about an hour. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your story and letting me into your life a little bit, sharing your novels and kind of like how you navigate when writing books and just kind of how you see life. So thank you very much for being transparent.
Oh, thank you. And thanks for, it's been your great interview if you were in, thank you so much for hosting me. And yeah, and have a fun Halloween tomorrow with your little one.
I appreciate it. Yeah. And if you have, how can people find your books? If you have social media, go ahead and let them know how to find it.
Yeah. Probably the best thing to do is go to my website, which is bethcastrodale.com. And it's Castrodale, CastroDale.com. And all my socials are basically under Beth Castrodale, like my Instagram and Threads, Twitter, all that stuff is Beth Castrodale. So.
Awesome.
So, if you read The Inhabitants, I hope you enjoy it, my new book. So, happy Halloween. And thanks again for hosting me.
Of course. Yeah, this was wonderful. Thank you so much. And, you're refreshing to talk to. So thanks for coming on. Maybe you can, come on again, 'cause this was fun.
Oh yeah, that would be great. We'll keep in touch about that. And I would enjoy that.
Cool. Awesome. And everyone listening at home, sleep with your doors locked tonight, okay? Sleep with your doors locked. All right. Peace out, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome to the Curiosity Chamber.